You don't grow up in my family without hearing about those promises. My great-grandfather Abraham was the first to hear God say, "Go to the land I will show you. I will make you a great nation, and all peoples on earth will be blessed through you." That's the kind of promise that changes a family. It changes your grandfather's stories. It changes the way your father raises you, and it changes how you see yourself. Some of my friends told me they'd be farmers or shepherds or merchants. I grew up being told God was going to bless the world through my family. But this robe changed more than just my style. My 11 brothers knew I was Dad's favorite, but this was too much. This changed the way they looked at me. This changed the vibe at every family meal. This changed my whole life, actually. Moses recorded our family biography, and he wrote about my dad. He wrote about me, and he wrote about this robe. He said, "Israel," and that's my dad, "he loved Joseph more than any of his other sons, and he made an ornate robe for him." And he recorded my brother's reactions too. They hated Joseph. That's me. They could not speak a kind word to him. The signs were all there, but I could not read them. And then came the dreams. The first one woke me up. It shocked me so much. I told my brothers because I knew the dreams meant something important. I told them, "Listen to this dream I had. We were all binding sheaves of grain, and suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright, and all your sheaves bowed down to me, to my sheaf." And immediately they snapped. Do you really think you're going to reign over us?" It was like their hatred for me just increased all the more. But I wasn't trying to boast. I was only 17, and 17-year-olds really don't know when to shut up, do they? Then came the second dream. I had another dream, and this time the 11 stars, along with the sun and the moon, they all bowed down to me. And this time I told Dad. My father rebuked me. "Will your mother and I also bow down with your brothers before you?" I don't think Dad ever forgot that. It really got under his skin. He didn't know what the dreams meant or how they would come to happen. Neither did I. But he knew God had chosen our family to bless the world. Coincidences in our family don't just happen. My brothers didn't care about the dreams. They didn't care what I had to say. They just wanted silence. And one day my father said, while my brothers were out working, "Go and see if all is well with your brothers and with the flocks, and come bring word back to me." I got directions. I got lost. This guy told me to go down to Dothan. I was eager to please, happy to help. When my brothers saw me from a distance, they must have said something to each other. "Oh no, here comes Joseph. Here comes that dreamer. Come now, let us kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns." Didn't actually hear them. All I saw was the looks on their faces, a mixture of anger and relief, like wild and hungry animals, as if they'd been waiting years for this moment. They tore the robe off me. They took the robe that made me special, and they threw me into a pit. Literally, I was rubbish in a skip bin. It was a deep pit, dry and cold, and I begged for help, and I begged for mercy. It was no use. It went quiet for a while. They probably had something to eat. And later I learned what they discussed. Apparently, it was my brother Judah who had the best idea. He said, "What will we gain if we kill him? Let's sell him. Sell me." 20 shekels of silver changed hands, and suddenly I was no longer free. I belonged to someone else. These traders, they led me away in ropes. My brothers didn't even pretend to be sad. They'd come up with this elaborate plan to get away with it too. They grabbed my coat, my robe, and they dipped it into goat's blood. And they took it back to my father, and they just said, "Recognize this?" My father wept for me because he thought I was dead. My father mourned for me, his son, and he vowed to keep mourning until he himself died. My poor dad. I was sold again, sold by the guys that my brother sold me to. I was bought by this wealthy Egyptian man, a guy named Potiphar. He was actually one of Pharaoh's top officials, very powerful. And so I came to Egypt and everything was foreign. The language, the culture, the clothing, the gods, the laws, the weather, the social status stuff. I didn't know the rules. I didn't know the dangers. But I knew one thing for sure. I knew something that everyone else had given up on. I knew what my dad had given up on in my death. Stuff was happening that no one expected. I was still part of God's plan. When everyone I loved and knew thought I was gone for good, God was with me. Moses recorded it like this in chapter 39 of our family biography. The Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered. And my master, my owner Potiphar, he saw that the Lord gave me success in everything I did. And it was phenomenal. Potiphar noticed that God was with me, and so he put me in charge of his whole household. I was still a servant. It wasn't like being the favorite son back home. But for the first time since the pit, I felt useful. I felt blessed. I was busy and tired and stressed, and I worked hard, but God was with me. And then she noticed me, Potiphar's wife. Anytime we were in the same room, it was awkward. It felt like she was kind of following me, always popping up nearby. Some of the other guys who worked with me would poke me in the ribs whenever she was nearby. Look who it is, Joseph. But it was no joke. One day she said to me when no one was around, Joseph, Joseph, come to bed with me. I refused and I said, look, my master's withheld nothing from me except you. How then could I do such a thing, do this wicked sin against God? But she kept coming to me day after day. Joseph, Joseph. When someone powerful wants something, the pressure is relentless. One day the house was empty, and here comes Potiphar's wife. She gets closer and closer. Come to bed with me. She grabbed me by my cloak, and I freaked out, and all I could think to do was slip out of it. And I just ran, and she just screamed. I'd never seen her so furious. And all of a sudden, she wasn't saying, Joseph, Joseph. Instead, she was accusing me of sexual assault. She'd forgotten my name. She said, this Hebrew slave has been brought to us to make sport of us. He came in here to sleep with me, but I screamed. Potiphar believed her. Everyone did. Of course they did. It was her house, and she was there holding my cloak. Potiphar was so angry. He threw me into the prison where Pharaoh's prisoners were kept, the place for people whose lives were over. It's strange looking back now. I was raised to expect that God would show up for me. I was the favorite. I had the special coat. I had the amazing dreams. It was rough when I was betrayed by my brothers. But I really thought that God was with me again in Potiphar's house. But now this? Surely not in jail. I never expected God to be there with me in the cell. The written record of it all says it all. It says it again and again. I remember it so clearly. While Joseph was there in prison, the Lord was with him. God showed me kindness. He granted me favor. He gave me responsibility. And he gave me success. Success in a prison cell. It sounds absurd. But that's where it all kind of clicked for me. That's where I realized the promises of God, the promises that God made me, didn't depend on my comfort. You can't look at your own comfort. You can't measure yourself by what's happening to you today. Right there in that dark cell, I learned to measure myself properly. I learned to judge my life by the promises of my God. God's faithfulness was not relying on me. I was relying on his faithfulness. God's faithfulness was not relying on me. I was relying on God's faithfulness. Months passed, maybe years. Then Pharaoh's cupbearer and his baker, they were thrown into prison, accused of doing something wrong. And then they both had these really weird dreams. The baker was terrified. The cupbearer was freaking out. I was confident that God was with me. And so I got involved in their drama and I said, "Don't interpretations belong to God? Let me have a go. Tell me your dreams." The cupbearer, he told me his first. It was a vine with grapes. It grew quickly and they squeezed the grapes and they gave the wine to Pharaoh to drink. God made it obvious to me. So I just said, "In 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you." And then the baker told me his dream. He saw baskets of food on his head, food for Pharaoh, but birds were picking at the food in the baskets. I wish I'd never heard it. Ignorance is bliss. But I told him what it meant. I said, "In 3 days, Pharaoh won't lift up your head. He'll take off your head and he'll impale your body on a pole and the birds will peck at your flesh." And it happened just like that. The baker was no more and the cupbearer was restored. And on his way out, I said to the cupbearer, "Remember me. Mention me to Pharaoh when you get there." But he didn't. He forgot. 2 more years passed. 2 years is a long time to sit in jail, especially when you've done everything right. But 2 years later, Pharaoh now was having some dreams, and no one could interpret them. 7 fat cows eaten by 7 thin cows, and then 7 full heads of grain swallowed by 7 withered heads of grain. And suddenly the cupbearer remembered me. He remembered the dreams guy. Apparently I'm the dreams guy now. Dreams are my thing. And before I knew it, Pharaoh had summoned me. Joseph, a sold slave, a convicted prisoner, summoned to stand before the most powerful man in the world. And Pharaoh said, "I heard you can interpret dreams." And look, I had to be honest. I said, "I can't do it myself, but God will give Pharaoh the answers he desires." So God gave me the interpretation. Pharaoh's dream meant that there'd be 7 years of abundance followed by 7 years of famine. Pharaoh trusted my interpretation. He listened. He started stockpiling grain for this famine, and he was boasting about how the Spirit of God was in me. And Pharaoh was so impressed, so confident in me and my God, that Pharaoh did the unthinkable. He was the only man with this kind of power, and he put me, this Hebrew slave who had once been thrown into a pit, he put me in charge of all of Egypt. It was crazy. I remember what he said, "Only with respect to the throne will I be greater than you." And I know what you're thinking. I've been telling this story for thousands of years. I'm not reading a script. This really happened to me. And this bit always gets the best reaction. "Only Pharaoh on the throne was greater than me. No one was greater." People are always really impressed that I was greater than everyone. And I always ask people when they're impressed, when it comes down to it, who is more impressive? Pharaoh or me? Or God? This is my God's power. I don't care if you're Pharaoh or Potiphar. Do not stand in my God's way. And really, you don't have to. God invites us to stand with him, to be on his side. I won't go over everything that happened afterwards, all the stuff during the famine. That's a story for another day. But I will say this, my brothers came back to me. The same brothers who sold me, the same brothers who said, "Let's kill him," they bowed before me, just like in the dreams, but not out of fear, but in their need. During that famine, in their desperation, they came to me. And when the moment came, when my revenge could have been so sweet, I heard myself say something I never would have said if God hadn't brought me through it all. I never would have said it if God had not saved me from the pit. I never would have done it if not for him freeing me from slavery, if not for God transforming me in the prison. I never would have said to my brothers, "You intended to harm me, but God meant it for good. You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good, to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives." God keeps his promises. He did for my great-grandfather Abraham, just as he has for me, he will for you. I can look back at it all, every pit, every snare, every trap, and say, God intended it for good. I get the sense that God can at any time take people's bad intentions and use them for good. I wonder how bad people's intentions could be that God could still use it for good. I wonder if one day God will take the most awful intentions and use it for the supreme good, to accomplish the saving of many lives. I just wonder. I wonder if next week, whatever washed up modern preacher you guys get to speak next week, I wonder if they'll know more about what happened next. My story isn't about dreams coming true. I'm not the dreams guy. My story isn't about Joseph, the hero. I'm not the hero here. My story is about a God who is faithful. Who is your story about? Heavenly Father, we know that in all things you work for the good of those who love you, who've been according to your purpose. If you are for us, who can be against us? You who didn't spare your only son, but gave him up for us all. Now won't you also, along with him, graciously give us all things? Oh, the depth of the riches of your wisdom and knowledge, God. How unsearchable your judgments and your paths beyond tracing out. Who has known your mind, Lord? Or who has been your counselor? Who has ever given to you that you should repay them? For from you and through you and for you are all things. To you be the glory forever. Amen.